Welcome to Brain Core, the podcast that introduces you to new psychology and neuroscience research. I'm Tolu Faramika, and I'm joined by my co-host, Christina Valkanis. So today we are doing something a little different than what we've done in the past. Christina reminded me that we are in the midst of cuffing season, and we decided to do an episode in relation to that. So although it is not the term of the episode, Chris, what is cuffing season?
As far as I know, cuffing season is just the time when people decide they're ready to settle down and get serious in a relationship. But I don't know, do you have any different ideas about it?
Yeah, I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head. Sometimes I see, like, the season has different, like, segments to it. Like, there's the...
the draft.
Yeah, there's the draft where you like have your options. Anyway, we're not getting into the details of that. But we thought it might be interesting to connect it to a psychological concept. So that concept is that of attachment styles. And so we're going to be talking about how that relates to how people often behave in relationships with others. But first off, we'll give like a little background into what attachment styles are. Chris, do you want to kick us off?
Alrighty. So I guess attachment theory, the first thing that I'd say about that is that there's this famous psychology experiment that most people hear when they first learn about it, which was done by Mary Ainsworth under the supervision of John Bowlby. And basically what they did was they put babies between the age of 9 and 18 months. Now the ethics of this was all questionable, but we can talk about that later. They put the babies in a room. It started off with a mother, a baby, and an experimenter. And then it was just the mother and the baby. And then a stranger joined. Then the mother would get up and leave the baby with the stranger. Not for a very long time, but still, it's pretty traumatic for a baby. The mother leaves, and the infant is left completely alone without the stranger as well. And then the stranger returns, and then the mother returns, and the stranger leaves. And basically what they do is they score the interaction of the baby between the baby and the mom and the baby and the stranger by looking at things like how close the baby is to the mom, how often the baby looks for contact with their mother, their avoidance behaviors, their resistance to contact, and how comforted they are when the mother returns. Mm-hmm. And they would take special note of like crying and smiling. So that was that experiment. That's the first one you heard of too, right, Tolu?
Yeah, it is. So that experiment is called the strange situation, which I think is pretty apt. It is a strange situation, and Mary Ainsworth kind of emphasized that, like, an attachment figure serves as a secure base for exploration, and so they kind of explore that in the experiment, the strange situation, by seeing how much the baby looks at their mother as this, like, point of safety that they can wander from or wander back to. One interesting thing about the strange situation, you can't actually figure out what the attachment styles are after the age of 2. So it's only for kids that are less than 2 years old, which is why they observed babies from the age of 9 to 18 months. I think they realized that they couldn't do it for kids that were older, much older than that. But yeah, so you may be wondering, how does that relate to how people behave in relationships? But it relates a lot. Like, there's a lot of research talking about how different kinds of stress, different types of attachment styles influence how one behaves, not only in like romantic relationships, but in friendships as well. So yeah, let's get into what the types of attachments are.
Okay. So the attachment types, it started off with 3, and then they kind of separated into four types. And basically, it's a representational model that we have a sort of schema of how attachment figures are represented in our minds. So the types that we have are,
we can go one by one.
Secure. So we're going to start off with secure.
Mm-hmm.
This is the attachment style that is ideal, right?
Yeah.
I'd say this is the one that most people would want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a situation where you're confident in the attachment figure. So with a baby, you might see that they're easily soothed when the mother returns. And it tends to be when a child has an available, responsive, and helpful attachment figure. So they develop a positive working model.
Yeah. Maybe like the only other thing I would add to that is, like, from what I said earlier, they do use like either another person or their mother as a secure base, so from which to explore. So they don't feel, they feel like their relationship with that person is so secure that they can leave and return, you know, as they please.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like that person won't abandon them. So then the next one is insecure avoidant. So this attachment style is, like it says in the name, it's one of the insecure ones. So I believe the other three other than secure are just under that umbrella of insecure, and then there are other names for it. So this one specifically is avoidant. And this type of individual tends to not orient to an attachment figure, so it's kind of difficult for them to feel drawn to that specific attachment figure, whether that's like a partner or a friend or like a parent, and they tend to be quite independent, so physically and emotionally. And one interesting thing about this is that I was looking into like factors that influence this type of attachment, and they said it's usually one of two explanations. It's either they had a parent that was quite impatient with them and was quite unresponsive, that they would just kind of like say, like, leave me alone, like, I'm not going to be bothered with you. Or they had a parent that was so overzealous and would just like chatter with them constantly to the point where the individual is like, I need to avoid you at all costs because you're like overstimulating my brain. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So yeah, I'll say that. That's all I want to say for the avoidant attachment style.
Yeah. They felt unloved and rejected maybe at the beginning. Or
mm-hmm.
I guess the other extreme would be having an overbearing figure. Yeah. It's funny how that works. You got to find the perfect middle
balance. Way. Yeah.
So coming up next after that one. So these are both insecure styles, but this one's the ambivalent / resistant style. And this is when they tend to display clingy and dependent characteristics. So at times when the child isn't getting attention, they will want attention, but then when they get attention, they will reject the attention.
Mm-hmm.
So in this strange situation, this might be a child that's not going out to explore the toys, whereas a secure baby would leave the mother, but like glance back sometimes, make sure she's still there, play
mm-hmm.
with the toys. This ambivalent one would be just clinging to the mother, not really exploring. And it tends to be when they get inconsistent responses from the caregiver. So the caregiver is either being really soothing and really attentive or just ignoring them. So that is that one.
Would this one also be the one that's called anxious?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's what
I
okay.
I think it's, I guess, like, if you get, like, anxiety when you're left alone,
mm-hmm,
so you become
mm-hmm.
clingy,
mm-hmm.
but then when you get the attention, you're just like, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, the last one that I think was added after a while, is called disorganized attachment. It's a disorganized attachment style. And with this one, it's also insecure. And this.
Sorry.
Yeah. Not a sponsor though. So this is the tendency for the child to first seek and then avoid their caregiver. So you can probably tell it's pretty self-explanatory just from the name. Disorganized, it's kind of like hot and then cold. And this usually arises when maybe they've had like a traumatic experience before with a caregiver. So they may be drawn to the caregiver, but then fearful because of previous experiences of like maybe even abuse. So from that, we have this like, okay, I'm like crawling towards you, mother. And then they like start crawling away. So it's very disorganized. Another word that they used to describe it is disoriented, which I like low-key think is kind of funny. Disoriented.
Just lost in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So another interesting thing was, like you said, that it could be because their attachment style is based in fear. So they have this perceived fear in their source of comfort. But another thing that I read about this style was that they might not have it because their parent is a source of fear, but it could also come if their parent is highly dissociated themselves because their parent has unresolved loss or trauma. So there's a disconnect between the parent and the child, and then the child gets disorganized trying to figure out how to develop a strategy to get their parents to stay connected with them, and then they become disorganized and fearful themselves.
Yeah.
So it could be some intergenerational trauma going on.
Literally. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to figure out, like, how do I connect with this person who's, like, hot 1 minute, cold the next? That means you also have to be, you kind of have to mirror them so that you can have some kind of connection. So, yeah, we'll get into what we did. So I found this quiz called, I think it's just called the attachment style.
Yeah, the attachment quiz. Project.
Yeah. So I'll put the link for the quiz in the bio in case you guys want to do the quiz as well. It's pretty quick. I don't think it took more than 5 minutes to do. And so from that quiz, basically what they do is they ask you a series of questions in relation to your relationship with your mother, your relationship with your father, and how you generally relate to maybe like a romantic partner, and then others in general, I think, is how it went. And from that, they had 4 different attachment styles, like what we just described, that you could possibly get. So we'll get into we'll get into the results a little bit. The only reason this is funny is because we already know what our results are.
Yeah.
So do you want me to go first?
Sure. What did you get, Tolu?
Mine is less interesting, so I got secure attachment.
Bummer.
Well, okay, it's not a bummer. Like, the first thing they said when I opened up the report, so you do get a report in your email just kind of like giving you more details about your attachment style. The first thing they said was congratulations.
Oh my god.
It's like
so different
okay.
than mine.
What did yours say?
Mine was all self-help, like,
oh my goodness,
things you can do
okay.
to get better.
So I'll read some of the statements that they gave me for secure attachment style, and I'm just reading the ones that I thought were pretty accurate. So the first one was you are warm and straightforward with others and are able to open up about your feelings. I feel like that one's pretty accurate. I am an open book. You can accept criticism without significant distress and are able to observe and evaluate your own skills and qualities. And then the next one right after that is you have good self-reflection skills and thus understand the consequences of your behaviors in social context. And I've said this maybe a million times to different friends, but I have like, I'm going to use the word sickening, I have sickening self-awareness. So like when I read that, I was like, wow, okay, that's pretty accurate. And it does help sometimes to be self-aware, and other times it's like, what are you doing right now? Like you should not be doing that right now. But yeah, so I related a lot with those. And then the last one is you manage to balance your emotions between the extremes of feeling too much and too little. And that one was kind of new to me, but then I was thinking about that and I was like, yeah, the example that kind of comes to mind is like driving.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they mean. Like they probably meant like emotions, like your emotional reaction to other people. But for me, I just started thinking about driving because like one thing about me is that I have never like honked my horn.
Oh no.
I have never honked my horn. And like my explanation for that is because by the time like my hand is already raised to do it, I'm already over it. Like I'm like not annoyed anymore by what just happened.
Would you like voice your opinion? Like if you're driving and somebody cuts you off, would you be like, really?
Yeah. Okay, for sure. Okay. So it's like yeah, so that for me is like enough before I like Yeah. I definitely
honk the horn because I'm not fast enough to react, but I'll be like really not
fast enough to react.
Like I feel like by the time I honk, it's too late. Like
it's like already, who are you honking at?
Yeah, like if I process it, I say really, and then I'm like, oh, I should have honked.
Yeah, I think that's what I do as well. So I was like, yeah, I think that falls. That's a pretty good balance of feeling. Too much and too little. So that's a little bit about I don't have road rage. I have like road disappointment. So yeah, that's it for secure attachment style. I feel like the report I got wasn't that interesting because it was just kind of like keep doing what you're doing and like help other friends that have insecure attachment styles. Which I think is a great segue to the question. Christina, what did you get?
Well, I got fearful, avoidant, disorganized. Mm-hmm. So, got like the worst one you can have. And it's funny because I knew that you got secure, but I didn't know what your report said. So I was sitting here like, maybe the quiz is wrong. Maybe I am secure too. But, like, deep down inside, I know that I'm not. Because before I even did the quiz, I told you, I think I'm avoidant.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got my result, and I'm fearful avoidant. Mm-hmm. But, like, listening to your results, you are warm and straightforward with others and able to open up about your feelings. No. Like, I think I'm straightforward with people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm warm. Sometimes I'm, like, the coldest person in the world.
Sometimes I'm warm.
Nobody ever knows how I'm feeling just because I just won't, like, I don't know. I just can't tell people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, no. And then the other thing you said, like, being aware of your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I told you before we started this that I'm in therapy. And that's why I started. Like, my email to the lady, she was like, well, what's wrong? And I was like, I just don't know how I'm feeling ever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she was like, okay, yeah, let's work on that. That's what I'm doing now. I'm trying to like label emotions like I'm 2 years old or something. And then
I feel like that's interesting because I think maybe another another school of thought is that one should just feel the emotion as opposed to trying to label it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think if it's like something that you would like to work on or you feel like is a barrier to getting like a secure attachment style, then
yeah,
it does help to be able to label the emotions that you're feeling.
Well, what happened with that was I realized that I was suppressing my emotions so much that now I just like don't even know they're there. So
yeah,
I think in order to get back to feeling things,
yeah,
because I'm heartless, I have no feet now.
Please.
To get back to feeling things,
mm-hmm.
I have to actually be able to like say, oh yeah, this is what that is.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. It's just like no. There's nothing. Like I just keep shoving it down.
Yeah.
So that is that. And then the criticism thing, yeah, no. If somebody criticizes me, it's funny because people always say, oh, you're so calm, you look like you don't care about anything, how are you like so chill? And it's like just a facade, because inside if somebody says, oh, like can do this better, I will start sweating and I'll just like, people don't know because I'm just like, okay, thanks. But I'm literally sweating like, oh no, I did something bad, like I need to fix that. And self-reflection, I don't know. I don't think I have a great sense of self, so yeah.
A great sense of self?
Like, I think in terms of self-reflection, sometimes I'll say things in social context or I'll do things and people, and then afterwards I'll be like, oh my gosh, like wow, I can't believe I did that. Or sometimes people will say, you said that. But I can read some of the, I guess I can read what mine said in contrast to yours.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, so the first things first is you show contradictory behaviors in your intimate relationships. Sometimes you're clingy and needy, and other times you're dismissive and distant. It's also possible that you get dissociated and disconnected in relationships. So the little hot and cold thing. And this is very, very true. Mm-hmm. In high school, little story, I had friends until like grade 12, and then something happened, some drama, and after that I just didn't talk to any of them like ever again. So that's a problem. Like, instead of being like you've been my friend since grade 6 and now it's grade 12, but I don't know, when something happens that hurts me, it's just like, okay, that's it, like I don't have energy to try and talk about this. The next one, a lot to unpack here. The next one,
yeah,
you exhibit instability, upheaval, and storminess in your intimate relationships. I don't know, because I haven't really had intimate relationships, probably because of this relationship style.
I also have not.
But
and I have a secure attachment style, so what does that mean?
I mean, I guess if we talk about like family and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly I'm like level-headed, like just stable, like chill. But then there are always points where it fluctuates. So it's like, oh, she's calm, and then there'll be a point where it's just like something triggers me and I'll blow up. So yeah, there's the storminess in my family life. As far as intimate relationships, I don't know. And it's probably just because, you know, if you're never talking about feelings or never letting yourself feel anything, then it's got to get out somehow.
Yeah. In terms of like suppression, I think when I think about suppression, sometimes it's actually more of like a snowball just building. What's that called?
Snowball effect?
Is it called the snowball effect? It's like when it's
you roll a snowball and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that is what I'm thinking of. I feel like there's another name for it. But yeah, that's how I think about like suppressing feelings. And for me, like, immediately I feel somehow about something, like I feel like I have to get it out or else it'll just make me feel very like, I don't want to use the word anxious. It just makes me feel very uncomfortable. So it's like, then I have to be like, yeah, I wasn't really happy about how you ate the last fry. And like, immediately I feel it. Like, it's not that I have to say it. Like, if it's not as important, like for something like that, I probably wouldn't say it because I don't really care about it. But if it's something I really care about, like, I have to get it out or else it'll just snowball.
Whereas me, I'm the exact opposite. It's like something happens and it's no, okay, that's it. Like, Nicole will always, my sister, she'll always say to me, like, why don't you just tell them? Obviously this bothered you. Why aren't you saying anything? Like, and then I'm just like, no, it's fine. That happened. It's not my job to tell somebody else how I feel. And then she's like, no, Christina, you really don't understand. People can't know how you're feeling unless you tell them. Say it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I don't have to teach them how to act. And she's like, oh my gosh, you're not teaching them how to act. You're just telling them how you feel. Which is something that reflecting on this is weird, because you'd think if we're raised by the same mother, like we'd have
the same. But the thing, I came across this statement a couple years ago and I was like, wow, that's so true, is that all siblings don't receive identical parenting. So like, for example, for me, I have two older brothers, right? My oldest brother at one point was a single child, right? And that he's also the first child. So he probably receives this kind of like, I'll use the term like test and fail or like whatever. Trial and error.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to figure out like what is your parenting style? Like, how do I relate with my child? How do I converse with them? And then they have my middle brother, right? And maybe they've like started getting into the rhythm. They like know what they want to teach their children, all of that. And then they get to me. And it's like, maybe when they've already had me, they're kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like, life will teach her the lessons that she needs to learn. And so it's like, as you go, like as the parent goes, they're also evolving and their parenting style is evolving. So it's like, regardless of whether it's the same mother or the same father, it's like their attachment style and the kind of caregiving that they are being given is going to be completely different than what you receive. Just maybe even because of like, and there are a bunch of articles on this as well, on like the effects of birth order.
Yeah.
And that, and like how that affects siblings, children. And I think it's really interesting because like there's this entire trope of like the middle child feeling like, is it like ignored or just they just kind of do their own thing?
Yeah. Honestly, we could do a whole episode on this, but
I know. But that's not the focus.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see though, like what our siblings would get into our own little experiment.
Maybe we'll bring on like siblings.
Bring on sibling guests.
Yeah, that would be pretty
funny. Oh my gosh, that would be funny. All right, the last two points I had were that I feel like I don't have a big impact on the world. You often feel ineffective and helpless in life and tend to have poor goal-oriented behavior. Not really. Like, do I feel like I don't have an impact on the world? Sometimes I'm like, okay, but I'm like, okay, really, what, me on the world? Like, it's just me. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, like, what? Like, I can't really. Sometimes I'm like, no, I can't change the world. But I don't know if that's just me trying to be realistic. But do I feel ineffective and helpless? Am I poorly goal-oriented? I don't think that is true. I think I have goals. I think sometimes I might act like I don't have goals or like hide the goals because I don't want to be disappointed if I don't reach the goals. So maybe I'm not as strongly oriented. Maybe I give up easier, but I do have goals. So thumbs up for that.
Yeah.
And then the last one is you want to be in a relationship, but you have a hard time bonding with opening up to and trusting others. You fear that your partner will abandon, reject, or hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is a true fact. I don't have... It's not easy for me to open up to anybody or trust them.
Mm-hmm.
On a surface level, I'm great. I can have conversations with people, but as soon as they start talking about other things, like
mm-hmm.
deeper emotions and stuff, it's like I'll trust very few. It's
yeah.
really rare that I'll be like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, and it is from that fear that
they're gonna.
It's mostly. I don't know if it's as much rejection, but I guess rejection is one thing. It's also me feeling stupid if I invest or tell something to somebody and then they just like leave me in the dust.
Mm-hmm.
But then if they leave me in the dust at the end, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I was stupid. That's not happening again. And then it just up goes the next wall.
Mm.
That is my style.
That's interesting because I find like I had to learn to I had to change my reaction to things like that. So it's like, okay, if you tell something to someone and they end up not having the reaction that you wanted, I feel like maybe it's our default to be like, oh my gosh, like I was dumb to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't have done that. And so then maybe in like later experiences, you just don't say what you want to say to them, right? But then I had to kind of stop myself from going to that point and instead be like, actually, it's more a reflection on like how they are than opposed to like how, whether like I was dumb to say it. I think you should always be like it's always your right to say how you feel, right? And it shouldn't be like, oh, okay, I was dumb for saying that to them. It's more of like they were dumb for not responding like a nice person. So that's kind of how I see it now, is so that way I don't like blame myself.
Yeah, you don't internalize.
Yeah, that too. Like once you put it out there, it's like, okay, it's no longer my problem. It is now your problem.
Yeah, that's true. I'm working on it.
But, yes, working on it, which is the important thing. So I came across this other article called Adult Attachment, Stress, and Romantic Relationships. And the reason I wanted to find this article is because I just wanted our listeners to know that there is a link between your attachment style and romantic relationships. And it was written by Simpson and Rolls. It came out in 2017. So I'll also put the link in the bio in case you want to read it. But so in this article, they kind of just review what is out there right now on attachment styles and also how it affects romantic relationships in adults. And kind of like everything you mentioned for the avoidant style, they touched on as well. But they also said that an individual who has an avoidant attachment style also tends to be independent. And like they value their autonomy a lot. And I was like, that sounds like a little someone I know.
Yes.
So, but then they also said that they tend to have negative views of their romantic partners, but then positive and brittle self views.
So I think both of those are true, because I think the reason why I have negative views of like people who I start to get close with is because I'm trying to preserve my autonomy so much that I like put myself above them almost, and it's like then you kind of you start to resent them because you feel yourself doing something you're not used to, and
mm-hmm.
it's I don't know if I do it mostly because of like coping or preparing, like just preparing to be let down, and then you start not to like them.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because in the article, they also said that avoidant individuals tend to have distancing / deactivating coping strategies. So it's like in preparation, you're already starting to like.
Yeah, you've got an advocate for it here. No, because you'll get close to someone and then you're like, okay, no, I've done this before. I've been let down before. So I don't get hurt as much this time, I'm going to start to make it seem like it's my choice. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, you start to pull away. And I guess that's like the hot and cold.
Let me dump you before you.
Yeah, or get you to dump me. So it's like, like it was almost my decision.
Reverse cycle.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. In the article as well, I guess we'll talk about this other attachment style, even though none of us got it. It's the anxious one.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah, this one I think is, to me, it's the most common one that I've seen in other people. And it's like
they find you.
They've been just looking for me as a secure base.
Yeah. You radiate it. They're like, oh.
Yeah. It's so interesting because, like, in the report that I got, because they didn't have much to say, they were like, yeah, you know, you should help out your insecure attached friends by telling them to go to therapy or to speak to a friend or a family member. And I just thought that was funny. but anyway.
You don't need that. Tell me. Don't worry. I figured it out. On my own. I'm independent, Tolu. How dare you?
Sorry, I don't want to like impede on your autonomy. Please do.
Do as you wish.
Yes. But yeah, so this individual that is anxious typically has a fear of abandonment. So they have that in common with the avoidant style. But the anxious individuals, this is maybe what's different, is that they're heavily invested in relationships, kind of to the point where it's at an extreme end of things. So like they question their worth, they worry about losing their partner, they are very observant when they feel like their apartment when they feel like they're okay, when they feel like their partner is pulling away from them. And I think this is the complete opposite of avoidant individuals, because they have like negative self views. And they have hopeful views of their partner. So it's like they're so invested in the relationship that they're like, oh, no, like my partner can do no wrong. Because also they don't want maybe to bring up flaws so that the person doesn't abandon them. And so I just thought this attachment style, I was kind of trying to think about why I think it's, or I feel like it's so common in others that I know. Have a lot of people been experiencing inconsistent caregiving?
It could be the, like, maybe the our generation being born to probably more working moms. So like when the mom's not at work, they're getting love and care and attention, but sometimes they're being looked after by somebody else and the mom's at work. Could be something like that.
Yeah, actually. I think if I didn't get secure, I feel like if I took this quiz a couple years ago, I feel like I would have gotten anxious.
Yeah.
Attachment? Yeah.
So but with... load off.
I've so much growth.
No,
because I actually thought, I was like, it's either I'm going to get anxious or secure. And yeah, so I got got secure. But so this type of individual, the anxious attachment style, they have emotion focused / hyperactivating coping strategies. So I think it's like they try to overcompensate for where they think that they are lacking. And sometimes, not sometimes, this often sustains or escalates their stress and also the issues that they're experiencing. So it's kind of like this circle of stress or distress, even with their coping strategies.
As a child, they just randomly, a child, they just randomly be getting the attention.
Yeah.
So they can't figure out what it is they do to get attention. So now they're just doing anything they can to try and keep it that way. So it's tough. Plus, but one thing to note. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, I just said it is tough.
I was going to say, like, one thing to note is that you can't change this. You can change your style, but it takes work. And, like, even now, like, knowing how I am, I realize when I do stuff and I'm like, okay, just try not to. Like, the first, what do they say? They always say, the first step is acknowledging that you have a problem. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Acceptance. Yeah.
You got to accept it. I accept that I have that. I know very well that I'm like this. I don't know where it came from, because, like, I don't think it was my mom, but it is what it is, and hopefully I can change it. Like, be more like you, Tola.
That's a scary thought.
Teach me your ways.
I'll do my best. I think sometimes it just comes from, well, obviously, like, your personality is this culmination of environmental and genetic factors. And so I think a little bit of it does come from your upbringing and the kind of caregiving that you receive, but it also just comes from your intrinsic personality. So yeah, I think that's a good place to finish off, is the fact that you can change your attachment styles and have more healthy coping strategies. We hope that a lot of you get secure attachment styles, maybe. But even if you don't, like we said, there are always different ways to improve your coping strategies or adopt different, better coping strategies. And with that, we will wrap things up. If you do want to take the quiz, like I said earlier, I will put it in the bio. And feel free to share how you feel about your results with us. Our email is thebraincorepodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram @thebraincorepodcast and on Twitter @thebraincorepod. I'll put the link for the article that we discussed as well in the bio in case you'd like to read that. And you do have a month to get back to us. And if we get any interesting reflections or comments, we will share that in next month's episode. Don't forget to fill out the subscriber form in our bio. Lastly, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we always appreciate a rating or a comment. It helps to boost the show. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you are having a great brain day.